For two decades, Wesley Schultz and Jeremiah Frades have been writing songs, recording, and touring together as the Lumineers. But as Wes says, their relationship goes way beyond that.
I mean, it's 20 years, and we also grew up in the same hometown where he was friends with my younger brother. I was friends with his older brother. So it's like, I remember family trips where you and your brother came with us.
Vermont.
Coming up, Wes and Jeremiah talk about the latest journey they took together, making the new Lumineers album, Automatic. They'll perform songs from it live, including this track, which is about their long, close relationship.
It kind of talks about, like, the struggles of, like, literally, like, if I go this way, he feels it with this, like, rope. And sometimes it's almost like the rope has, like, a barb in Wes's stomach and vice versa. He wants to go left, and I'm like, I want to go right.
The Lumineers, today. I'm Raina Duris. This is World Cafe.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. State Senator Justin Eichhorn has resigned from the Minnesota State Senate following his Monday arrest for soliciting a minor for prostitution. The Minnesota State Republican Caucus announced the resignation on social media, confirming Governor Tim Walz received and accepted a letter from Eichhorn. Senate Minority Leader Mark Johnson says the resignation was, quote, the right thing to do for his family and the Senate. Republicans had planned to move for a vote to expel Eichhorn during Thursday's floor session, which requires a two-thirds majority. Instead, the session began with Secretary of the Senate Tom Bodern reading the resignation letter.
Governor Walz, I am resigning my seat in the Minnesota Senate for District 6 effective immediately. I must focus on personal matters at this time. It has been an honor to serve in the Minnesota Senate. Sincerely, Justin Eichhorn.
The advisory board of the Minnesota Department of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation also announced it will convene a special meeting soon to reorganize its leadership after Eichhorn's resignation. He was serving as board chair since February. Eichhorn made his first court appearance Thursday before Judge Shannon G. Elkins at the U.S. District Courthouse in St. Paul. Court documents show he would be released to a halfway house, but the Star Tribune reports he would remain jailed until a bed becomes available. Eichhorn is prohibited from contact with unaccompanied minors and cannot leave the state without permission. His next hearing is scheduled for March 26th. Eichhorn's departure from the Senate means Republicans now have 32 members, while the DFL has 34. Minnesota law states the governor shall call a special election to fill the vacancy in Senate District 6. The district includes the cities of Grand Rapids, Brainerd, and Baxter. Already, at least one candidate has emerged as a contender for the seat. Emily LeClaire of Brainerd announced her intention to run on social media. LeClaire ran as a DFLer in the House District 6B race in 2024, challenging Representative Josh Heintzman and third-party candidate Troy Scheffler. More than 600 mining employees will be laid off with the idling of the Minorca mine near Virginia and partial idling of the Hibtac mine near Hibbing. State Senator Grant Hochschild first announced the layoffs described as temporary in a statement on Thursday. Cleveland Cliffs confirms the planned idling of two of its Iron Range mines affecting 630 workers. The company says the temporary idles are, quote, necessary to rebalance working capital needs and consume excess pellet inventory produced in 2024. The idling is set to begin in 60 days in accordance with the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act. Iron Range Today reports that in a letter it obtained to the union, a Cliffs executive writes they can't anticipate how long the layoffs will be and that they could exceed 6 months. Friday marks 20 years since the Red Lake High School shooting, the deadliest school shooting in state history. Larissa Donovan tells us how the community will commemorate the tragic events.
Red Lakes High School shooting in 2005 was, at the time, the deadliest school shooting in the country since Columbine in 1999. 10 people's lives ended that day, including the shooters. To remember those lives lost, students at Red Lake will participate in a walk of remembrance on Friday, followed by a community gathering shortly after school. The 32105 Project, a collaboration of former Red Lake students, is organizing Friday's events. The group has also been fundraising for a permanent memorial near the Red Lake Nation College campus since 2022. The project, also known as the Red Lake Memorial Fund, joined the Northwest Minnesota Foundation's family of funds in late 2024. People can donate at the foundation's website. Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
The Grand Rapids Fire Chief saved a woman's life in a house fire late Sunday night, according to a Wednesday news release. The fire department responded to the report of a house fire on Sunny Beach Road after working smoke detectors alerted residents. Itasca County 911 operators learned one person was still inside. Law enforcement tried to make entry but were unable to because of heavy smoke. Using a thermal imaging camera through a bedroom window, Fire Chief Travis Cole found the woman lying on the floor. He then climbed through the window, picked her up, and handed her to responders waiting outside. The woman was treated at Grand Itasca Hospital for smoke inhalation and released on Monday. Two other occupants were treated on scene for cuts. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. The first single the Lumineers released from their new album, Automatic, is called Same Old Song. And when you've spent two decades working together, like the Lumineers singer-guitarist Wesley Schultz and multi-instrumentalist Jeremiah Freites, it could be easy to fall back on the same old songs. But the chance to self-produce their new album, Automatic, meant they had a whole new level of creative freedom. And coming up today, they'll talk about the fun they had in the studio, the way their songwriting has changed over the years, and about their unique relationship as bandmates, friends, and almost family. You'll also hear them perform songs from Automatic live, beginning with Same Old Song. Recorded in front of a live audience, this is The Lumineers on World Cafe.
Hey mama, would you pay my rent? Would you let me crash in your basement? 'Cause any one of us could make it big or could end up dead on the pavement. And if I was to die, if the plane went down and you survived. You ever wonder what your parents meant when they told you grandma's in heaven? 'Cause I don't feel it like I did back then in a black sedan of depression. And everyone's alright, I cannot afford to see the light. I don't know what's wrong with me. I killed the moon so naturally. The guests begin to make me feel alone. Say, sing the same old song. We sing the same old, same sad song. In the prayer where the tall pit's black, like a starving now for the innocent. You said the boulevard was not that bad, but they jacked our van with the instruments. In the broad daylight, trunk and left the keys behind. All the cops pretend to care. I'll never see my mom guitar again. I don't know what's wrong with me. I killed the moon so naturally. The guests begin to make me feel alone.
For the World Cafe, the Lumineers, same old song. It's from their new album, Automatic. I'm Raina Duras. Today, I'm joined by the Lumineers, Wesley Schultz and Jeremiah Freites. Welcome to the World Cafe. Thank you for having me. Welcome back, I should say.
Yes.
I know you've been on before. Same old song, a rollicking song, but kind of a dark one. One of our interns mentioned that they saw people debating on social media whether that song was a fun road trip song or a gut-wrenching sad song about the existential dread of death. Do you want to tell us which one it is?
That song, for me, was like a smattering of, like, memories over the... And then the anchor is the idea of a same old song. Like, we come back to these songs that, you know, give us some weird level of comfort, even if they're sad. But, like, I mean, our bandmate Stealth sent me a podcast about a girl who went down in a plane, like... The plane crashed. She somehow survived in the Amazon, I think. But her mother passed away and other passenger passed away, and she somehow like made it out alive. And it just like stuck with me. And then my kids asking me like, "What is heaven?" Like all these us getting robbed back in 2011. Mm. There's like it's just almost like a. I never saw the movie, so I shouldn't reference it. But Everything All at Once or whatever.
Yeah
like where
yeah.
I've seen the preview where it's like. Your system is like getting hit with all this stuff. That's kind of what I like wanted to do with the lyrics because the drum has like such a ba-do, ba-do, like a drive to it that it's disorienting, and then you anchor it with this
right
chorus. So
it's
yeah.
kind of like overstimulation, being kind of overwhelmed, right?
Yeah.
But it is an interesting way to open an album. It's also the first single. How do you see that setting the tone for the rest of Automatic, Wesley? You want to take it? Or?
I think maybe part of the tone that I like is that it involves a lot more drums. You know, I think Jer can play drums as well as anyone I've ever met, if not better. You know, like, but he's like able to put ego aside and like serve the song, and that's like I think the best bands are able to do that together, and he's always been doing that. But it showcases some of what he can do on many instruments, but the drums in particular, where you'll hear a lot more drums on the record, which I really love because it contrasts against some of the older records, which are just like, it sounds just like stomps and claps.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a richer thing to,
sure.
to pull from, you know?
I mean, this year, 2025, marks about 20 years of songwriting
yeah.
of me and Wes, starting out in Little Ramsey, New Jersey. And it's funny, I think a song like Same Old Song kind of accomplished, in my mind, what we set out to do with the song Submarines on album one.
I believe submarines.
Submarines, the original demo had this da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but it was sort of fatiguing and unsustainable. It had
right.
this sort of weird time
like
signature.
Like to play, you mean?
Just to, like, produce the song.
Listen
like once
back
the, you know, like, I feel like a Lumineer song, people ask us, when is a Lumineer song done to you guys? I think the litmus test is, like, in its most basic... answer to that question is like when the song can work just with Wes's singing over a single instrument, whether that be guitar, like a song like Ho Hey works really well just on the guitar.
I've been trying to do it right. Hey! I've been living a lonely life.
A song like Ophelia, you could play just on the piano.
Oh, Ophelia, you've been on my mind, girl, since the flood.
Arguably all of our songs, I think you could play just on one instrument. So Same Old Song, for example, once it's done, we were like, what if we could get away with these drums that are crazy? And I think that like with Submarines, it had this, when we took away all the drums, it had a better story from a production sort of standpoint. I think Same Old Song, once you start with those crazy drums, you're sort of like, how do you dress it up? And songs are funny. Songs are sort of, working on music sometimes is easy because the song will really quickly tell you what it wants and what it doesn't want. So it would be really quick to reject an idea rather fast, like, no, stop, or keep giving me drums. I like that one. Same Old Song, we had this sort of drum loop, and then I went in there almost to, like, try something, but also make the guys in the control room sort of laugh.
Right.
You know, you're just in a studio, you're, like, getting out all this creativity, and I did, like, a really crazy take.
It was like Keith Moon.
Yeah, it was like kind of this, like, really, like, ADD, just crazy, you know, electric drumming. And we're sort of like, all right, let me do a real take. And I think the feedback was like, yo, that was actually, there was something to that. Try that
like, we
again.
We like the crazy one.
Yeah, and it was kind of making the whole album. I've never had more fun with Wes ever writing and recording the songs because it was a lot of that. It wasn't like in the past, you know, I think it was like strangling the ideas, which I think at times we needed to do that. I think the first two albums come to mind, like working on an idea so psychotically and exhausting every, like literally every other iteration to the point that we knew this was definitely, at least in our minds, the best possible version of the song. Whereas on this Automatic, it was really being playful and, you know, trying to find that sense of youthfulness now that it's our fifth album, now sure. that we're, you know, approaching middle age, now that we're fathers of two kids.
Well, I'm really glad that you brought up the, like, how you know if a song is working, because I know this is the first album you guys co-produced, right? Is that Blue News?
In theory. I think we always were making our own music, and then there's the word, and I'm taking nothing away from any producer, especially the ones we've worked with, but I think there's a collaboration that happens, but there's also, like, I think when we're starting out, we don't want to step on anybody's toes, and we're just happy to be there. But I think because we were home recorded for maybe 7 years, just me and him, we had to do that. So it's like, I think it makes for a better artist when you can at least know some of how to, like, what you want.
Yeah.
And someone's not just like, we'll do this next, and it's paint by number. You want to have, so I thought it was really collaborative. And again, like, it's nice when nobody's ego's threatened. They're just looking for the best idea.
Yeah.
And there's nothing worse. It's like out of a bad movie about a band when someone's like, where's my solo? And you're like, well, we don't need, you know.
Like the ego stuff.
Yeah, that limits what you can accomplish. In the same way as a team, if someone's like, on the Eagles, if it was like, well, I didn't have any receptions. Like, did we win? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're trying to win and those players drag you down. Like, it's the same in a band in some ways where you kind of need to shed all that if you really want to get beyond that. Because it's really nice to not have to be suspicious of people's reasons for liking an idea. It could get poisonous, you know?
I'm talking to Wesley and Jeremiah of the Lumineers on World Cafe today. We're going to hear you perform a song that grabbed me immediately when I listened through. I think it might be my favorite song on the album, So Long.
Nice.
Could you tell us how this song came together before we hear it?
Yeah, that was like a buzzer beater, I want to say. Like, we didn't know if we had enough songs to make the record towards the end, and we're like, oh, remember that? We had done this Neil Young tribute record, and we were somewhere in South America on tour, and we, you know, ducked into a studio for a day and kind of reharmonized his Neil Young song, Sugar Mountain, and added some chords. And then as we were doing that, I was like, we got to do something with this. This is like, a similar thing happened when we did a Leonard Cohen tribute where the way we were playing this guitar and the way it was tuned, that became Salt in the Sea. It sometimes happens. You're doing like a side project or like an assignment, basically. Like you're trying to pay tribute to your hero, and then you're like, oh, I would never play this chord, but I'm playing Neil Young's song and now I want to do it. So
they're a hero for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's like because they write interesting music.
It's incredible. And we play it on it's called a White Falcon, and it's like his very signature. Neil Young's like has a signature sound in part of the 70s, and it's that. That song's played on that, and it was written in kind of a fury, like a very or a flurry, like very fast. I remember sending you some ideas in the morning, and then that day we called our bass player, and he said, we're recording this. And then we just did two takes, and then done. If you listen to the album straight through, it has some of the highest level of desperation and energy. Because that, you know, similar to Angela on our second record, those buzzer beater songs that you record last minute, that they're not promised, you don't even know if it's going to turn out well. There's a searching in the dark element that is really exciting as a listener. So that's our favorite, too. It's cool when people resonate with it.
Yeah. I mean, you can feel this song. Let's listen to the performance. This is the Lumineers performing So Long live for the World Cafe.
Find songs of Billy Adam, moths are eating blankets for babies. And if you lost your way to heaven, buy another ladder from Jacob. Lead it into matter that don't.
Jacobson on the violin right there.
Performing for a World Cafe audience, that was the Lumineers live doing a song from their new album, Automatic. It's so long. Jeremiah and Wesley of the Lumineers are here with me today. I'm Raina Duras. Like you said earlier, you started playing together about 20 years ago. This tour, big venues, you're playing, you know, arenas, amphitheaters, big spots. How have you had to change the way that you think about performing when you compare it to how you started out?
I feel like it's a little more, when you're in a stadium or an arena, it's like exaggerated as the best way I can say it. Like, I remember someone likening it to, they were explaining the difference between television and being on like Broadway or something, where television, they pick up like the smallest twitch of your, you know, muscle in your face. And on Broadway, you have to like really gesticulate what's happening. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like you're a silent, you know, silent actor. So for us, like, if in the past we were trying to communicate an emotion, it's just a bigger expression of that. And then a lot of it, I would say, is like someone, this stage designer named Sooner, she's been with us since like the beginning. She works with all these amazing bands to this day, and she's built this amazing career. But when we started, she was kind of starting too. Now she does Coldplay. She's like, anybody who has crazy, I just saw Green Day, she did theirs. But she helps to sort of communicate that as well. Right. Like, does some of that heavy lifting that I think, I would say, a band like U2 really pioneered. When you'd go to a stadium show, I'm sure pre-U2, it was a little boring.
It wouldn't be as much of a spectacle.
Yeah. They made it an event and, like, engaging for the back row. So I think that, and then maybe people, especially Bruce Springsteen and Tom Petty, seeing them in big venues as a young person and being like, wow, they pulled me right in. I felt like I was just like in their living room.
And they wouldn't need, I mean, a bit, like Springsteen doesn't necessarily need that spectacle. He can pull in the back row just from his performance, right?
Yeah, so he's telling you a story. He's telling stories. He's talking to you like you're next to him. It's like, I think there's a combination of a lot of that influence.
Has it changed how you write at all when you're thinking about playing to huge rooms versus little clubs?
On a personal level, I don't think so. I think I won't name any specific bands, but I swear you can, certain bands that have sort of veered off the path and kind of slightly broken my heart, like you feel like they get really big off a song middle or late into their career. And then they're like, we're a big band right now. We want to play stadiums. There's this great like TED Talk. David Byrne talks about when you're starting off small, like CBGB's The Living Room. Punk music, fast music works really well and does not work well in, like, say, you know, a big stadium. So big stadium acts, like Journey's a great example. It's like these kind of mid-tempo, you know, slow kind of
ballady.
Ballady type songs that work really well. And you can kind of see bands sometimes that do that.
Like reverse engineer it.
Yeah. Like we want to be in the stadium. I mean, I swear, I feel like Wes and I as a writing duo, as a writing team, we're just lucky that we've sort of literally always made what we just like selfishly, truly. And then it seems to resonate with people that got our foot into the door of stadiums.
Well, Jeremiah, I'm so glad you brought up that David Byrne TED Talk, because that was exactly what I was thinking about when I was thinking about that question that I wanted to ask you, because it is so interesting to me how the acoustics of a room can change the way that you are playing.
I would say, too, like, to that point, if you listen to the album one, it is very, we're writing while playing gigs that mostly involve house shows, so like busking style. There's not really typically microphones. So if you listen, that whole album is not so much sung as it's like shouted at someone. Now that we have microphones, we can be more and more have quiet moments. But it was like, looking back, I was like, I can't do it unless I'm shot. They won't hear me.
There's a bar we played, I feel like at least twice down here in Philadelphia. I don't remember the name. I feel like it was like...
Puck? Are you talking about?
No, but like in proper Philly, like something with maybe a name, something Brenda's or...
Oh, Johnny Brenda's.
Was that here in Philly?
Yes.
It's that old boxing
game. Yeah, those are the types of clubs that me and Wes and the band, we were starting off at, and you're sort of like, we would literally get off stage and typically play Ho Hey, like at people, and we just, if we could make people turn their jaw, turn their head 90 or 180 degrees away, that was sort of our way to be like, listen, we just drove 10 hours through the night or whatever just to get to this gig, whether it was Philadelphia, whether it was the middle of Nebraska, wherever it was, we were like, you know, we have 45 minutes to make this work.
Yeah.
And nobody's ever going to care about your new band the way you do. So I think Wes shouted at people.
Well, I wasn't going to win a singing contest, but I could shout. You know what I mean?
It was like a non-musical moment. Me and Wes also talked about this idea of non-musical moments, that it'd be pretty rare for someone to like go home and be like, I saw this band. They were so well rehearsed. You know,
that's a really great point. Like, so I've never thought that ever
was like our thesis, though. I mean, Jimi Hendrix lit his guitar on fire. You know, what did we do? We were never going to light our instruments on fire. I mean, we didn't have enough money.
We can't do backflips. So
I think it was like, what's a non-musical moment? And some bands that we were sort of like, you know, growing up with, so to speak, some people I feel like were like kind of criticizing, like, oh, you guys have a gimmick, you get off stage. And we're like, but I think it was cool. I mean, I was at a show at this place, a dive bar, literally called the High Dive in Denver, where we lived together for, you know, more than a decade. And I remember seeing this duo getting off stage, making like a circle around them and singing some like beautiful song. And it was this light bulb moment of, that was really interesting. I'll never forget that.
You're trying to, like you said, create those non-musical moments in ways that feel like at home to you. Cause like if I can't do a backflip, so what can we, you know what I mean? Like everybody's going to have their thing, but yeah, it was useful, and we're still trying to look for those moments, like in shows, you know?
You're listening to my conversation with the Lumineers. Keeping up a lifelong friendship is challenging enough without being in a band together. Coming up, Wes and Jeremiah will talk about how they've done it for decades, and they'll perform an exclusive live version of an older song of theirs. That's next on World Cafe.
Good morning. We really appreciate you listening to the World Cafe on Northern Community Radio, KAXE, KBXE. My name is Dan Gannon. Did you know you can name KAXE as a beneficiary in your life insurance policy or individual retirement account, and you may receive additional tax benefits as well? The next time you meet your advisors to review your estate or long-term financial plans, remember to ask about including KAXE in those plans. For additional giving options, visit kaxe.org and click on Give. The History of Jazz is on Saturdays at noon and Sundays at 4 p.m. with host Paul Kivi. Listen while he explores the distinctly American art form, and catch more jazz on Sundays at 6 p.m. with the volunteer-hosted Jazz on America Avenue. With ice conditions changing rapidly, the Minnesota DNR is reminding us to use extreme caution on area lakes. With fluctuating temperatures and rain, ice can deteriorate quickly. Ask others about ice conditions, wear a life jacket, and use ice picks before you go ice fishing. Bring a buddy. Back to the World Cafe.
Welcome back to the World Cafe. My name is Raina Duris, joined today by the Lumineers, who have a new album called Automatic. We'll get back to my conversation with band members Wesley Schultz and Jeremiah Freites right after some more live music from them. This is the Lumineers performing their song Gloria from their 2019 album 3 in front of a live World Cafe audience. Gloria, recorded live for the World Cafe by the Lumineers. That's from their 2019 album, 3. They have a new album out now called Automatic. I'm Raina Duris. Wesley and Jeremiah of the Lumineers are hanging out with me today. At this point in your career, you are 2 decades in. You know, it's a lot to stay good friends with someone for as long as you have been together as a band, but being bandmates adds another layer to that. How has your relationship changed since you started the band?
It's been like, I mean, it's 20 years. And we also grew up in the same hometown where he was friends with my younger brother. I was friends with his older brother. So it's like, I remember family trips where you and your brother came with us.
Vermont.
But I think like my take on that is, you know, we did so many things at a young age together. We used to joke like we were living together out of necessity, living together. We had the same side jobs. Because if you get a good side job, you get your buddy the side job. And now like you're at work together.
Literally, like, every free moment, we, like, worked around each other. We did that for probably, was it 7 years?
And shout out to your mom, if she ever hears this. Your mom and dad, especially Kathy, your mom, was, like, always letting us play and make noise every hour of the day on this third floor, kind of, like, almost like an apartment for somebody.
Yeah, it's like attic space.
She let us just set up shop. we could record there, we could make noise there.
I was thinking it was almost wild. Like Outliers, like Malcolm Gladwell talks about the Beatles, or like I think Bill Gates was sneaking in, had this like really strange amount of time around computers. And I think that we had this strange amount of time around no boundary, no rules, workspace from, I mean, like literally 7 a.m. to like sundown, 8 p.m., whatever. We could just make noise. That's a huge like privilege.
That's amazing, yeah.
To have access to that. Yeah. And then I was like, we had a rude awakening when I finally moved to New York, where it was just like, it was, oh, so I would start commuting from the city to his house.
Right.
So it's like, it's a lot of like luck that way, like the right circumstances that allow you to get that much access to stuff.
Yeah, we were like, do we want a cool zip code or do we want to make it as a band? And we moved to Denver, Colorado, just out of sheer. It was way cheaper to live there a long time ago. But I mean, it's a pretty emotional day. The album is finally out. And the relationship has changed in many ways, I think, for me and Wes, that we each have kids, boy and girl. They're almost like identical in age.
Yeah, you both had kids like, during the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
At like the same time, basically.
Yeah, we have separate lives with like our families. And then me and Wes are sort of like, we're married to each other long before we met our respective wives. It's always like, and it's always a work in progress. I mean, I think that.
Well, also finding some space. I think when you're on top of like, pause. When you're around each other for everything, you can't, like, there's a running joke when we moved to Denver, like, if you'd see one of us, you'd ask where the other one was. And, like, it's been really, Jer fell in love with someone who's from Italy, so he moved with her back to her home city of Turin. And honestly, like, that's, I think, a really, when you have the luxury of sending voice notes to each other just by a click of a, you couldn't always do that. That's given, I think, us a longer, like, ability to have a friendship and like be able to work together in a healthy way, because not everything is done together. You can't sustain that, I don't think, you know, with almost anything. Even if I've seen people like real marriages, like not musical marriages, where you go to like, I don't know, say a random store and the husband and wife work there, and I'm like, I would never want that. Like, you know, like it seems nice for a day, but it's nice to have your own lane and not be like, is he chewing with his mouth open again?
Yeah,
like,
you bring whatever all, the you're thing just always is. There. Yeah. There's no.
So we found some space, and I think we honestly create a lot of random things on our own anyway, and then come together to demo. So it kind of worked out, like, very luckily, because I think we're part of a rare thing where a band lasts like 20 years of writing together, and another 20 ahead of us, and like that's because we. There's an element of like you got to find your own lane and space, or else you'll just hate each other.
I think what's really cool too is Wes really found some clever ways to talk about our personal relationship in very clever ways. Where, you know, if you were to listen to certain lyrics in isolation, you might be like, "Oh man, this guy thinks the relationship is bad," and if you listen to other ones, you'd be like, "Thinks it's great all the time." There's a song that comes to mind, "You're All I Got," that Wes has this lyric. What is it, Siamese?
It's hard to breathe, yeah.
Yeah, Siamese connection, do you say, or just Siamese?
Just Siamese.
It's hard to breathe. It's like, it kind of talks about like the struggles of like literally like, if I go this way, he feels it with this like rope. And sometimes it's almost like the rope has like a barb in Wes's stomach and vice versa. He wants to go left and I'm like, I want to go right. And I think that is a true example though of a really hard, but really like, beautiful relationship of 20 years. Like there are moments that it's so difficult to be like, to have this. And then there's like these moments where you're like, wow, like look what we make together. Not only just musically, but like, look at the shows, look at this album, look at a lot of stuff. And I think it's a very like authentic relationship where what relationship do you have that it's easy all the time?
We're going to finish with You're All I Got and hear you guys perform that. But before we hear that, not to get too sappy, but I did want to ask you, Jer, what's your favorite thing about Wes? Wes, what's your favorite thing about Jer?
That's a good question.
It's like therapy. We did this one time in therapy. I forget my answer, though.
I mean, so non-musical?
It can be anything you want.
Great, let me think. I don't know. I would say Wes's honesty. I think that Wes has this ability to be sometimes too honest.
I agree.
Wes is very honest and I think very direct. And I think that that's really appreciated in the big picture of things, in the grand scheme of a relationship, in the grand scheme of running a business with someone in the grand scheme of being friends with someone and sharing so much, it really is like healthy and helpful. And it's pretty rare, I think, for people. We all sort of design our avatar in the way we want to be seen by other people. It's called looking glass self. I think someone, I was a sociology major, so I love that idea. We sort of construct our personalities the way we want other people to perceive us. And I think, to credit Wes, I think that he's just is who he is and wants to be authentic. And I think that that's really cool in this modern era.
Thanks, man. That's very nice. Isn't it? Really appreciate it.
Okay, Wes, your turn.
No pressure.
I mean, there's like, I could go the musical direction, which is just that I've never met somebody who's, he taught himself piano since I've known him music. Like, so in 20 years, he's now gotten so good at piano and artistic with it that there's like there's two albums behind it and, you know, movie soundtracks to come and things like that. But I think part, like an underrated part of people is their sense of humor. And like Jairus has this ability to like say something that shouldn't make sense, but it makes perfect sense to everybody. Like giving people nicknames or all of our Wi-Fi passwords are based on things Jairus said.
Can you give us one?
It's very inappropriate. I can't do it. But it's like, it's.
I have a knack for messing up like, adages and expressions. Like I'll say, it's like bridge underwater. And I'll say that like without thinking about it. And I think there's
like,
even.
It stinks to high hell in here. And we're like, no, it's heaven. But most of them I can't really share here. But they're,
on the radio,
they're all
yeah.
great. They're all great.
They're like PC. They're
no, just, I don't mean they're like,
no,
it's
no,
just
I hear
like
you.
Not. Yeah.
He's a maniac.
Yeah. He's so inappropriate. He's edgier than that.
We're getting Jeremiah canceled on the podcast. Yeah. So we're going to hear You're All I Got perform live next. Before we hear it, real quick, is there anything else you want to tell us about this song?
I mean, it was cool. Jared sent me this voice note, and in it, he sang You're All I Got. And he's not, like, primarily a singer, but, like, he can hit the notes, you know, most of the time. And it's like, I could hear exactly what he was doing. And I was like, wow, that's kind of, there are a lot of, for example, like Bob Dylan songs where he says these things that we all say all the time, but when they say them the right way with the right melody and the right moment, it's like, it's profound. That encapsulated a lot for me, not only between me and him, but I'm sure with our prospective children and, you know, our wives. But I just remember feeling like, you mentioned it earlier, but you're sort of, when you truly love someone, and you start to like need them because you love them so much. That's a very uncomfortable feeling if they're ever in danger or you're in danger of losing that relationship. Like something as simple as your kid crossing the street ahead of you, too far ahead. That's your all I got. Like it's very inconvenient to love someone this much. Like but it's also the highest of highs.
Man, that's really interesting you say that. I had such it's like a dark, heavy thought. But as soon as my son was born, I said to a buddy, I was like, no matter what at this point, if anything ever happens to him or to me prematurely, one life will be like forever like ruined and just like
and that's like you're tethered to,
yeah you're just like whoa, like I hope that he lives long life and I go way before he ever does. And it's an intense but very real thought.
Yeah. Here's the Lumineers performing it live. This is You're All I Got.
Count the blows you took like a champ. All the years we walked. Sighing means it's hard to breathe in. 20 years and no one gives a damn. Let the light come down on me. Let the light come down on me. Feeling bored and running from the shame. Living for the love of yesterday. Lord, your feet straight.
fresh limousines. Pull the cord and flush down the drain. Let the light come down on me. Let the light come down on me. Trips your daddy's gone. Will he ever make it back to base? Frozen hands, shake your wrist, the band-aid. Blame yourself for what you didn't say. Let the light.
Thank you so much.
The Lumineers live for World Cafe. That was You're All I Got. It's a song from their new album, Automatic. Jeremiah Freights and Wesley Schultz of the Lumineers have been my guests on the show today. It has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
It's been really nice. I'm Rena Duras, back in a moment with more World Cafe.
Happy Friday, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to the World Cafe on KAXE KBXE. I'm Dan Gannon. The Beltrami Master Gardeners will be at the Bemidji Senior Center today, Friday, March 21st at 1 p.m., sharing garden tips and presentations. Support for this program comes from Sanford Health. With primary care locations in Bemidji and across the Upper Midwest, Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org. Northern Light Opera Company holds auditions for their summer musical Once Upon a Mattress Friday, March 21st at 6 p.m. and Saturday, March 22nd at 1 p.m. at the Park Rapids Armory Arts and Events Center. Find more info at northernlightopera.org. Great River Rescue has their annual Fur Bowl Sunday, March 23rd from 1 to 3 p.m. at Bemidji Bowl. Individuals and teams may register at greatriverrescue.com. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, your volunteer on the river host will be Gina the Knife until 4 o'clock. And now back to the World Cafe.
Before the break here on World Cafe, you heard a session with the Lumineers. You can also find that on our podcast. It's World Cafe, wherever you find your podcasts. And you can watch that interview and those performances. The full video is at worldcafe.org and also on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/worldcafe. So you can listen and you can look. This is Look It Here from Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats.
Crying out. Maui. Let me be. Look at here, baby, it's all I got. One more time. Give me all, yeah. Oh,
That's The Who with Substitute, released in 1966 as a single and later included on the 1971 compilation album Meaty Beaty Big and Bouncy. And that is this hour of World Cafe. Thank you again to my guests, the Lumineers, and thank you to World Cafe senior producer Kimberly Junod for her work on that session. Also, thank you to our affiliates across the country, including Troy Public Radio. We produce this show at WXPN at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm Raina Duras. Thanks for listening to World Cafe from NPR.
World Cafe is supported by the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. And by the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR be the model for high-quality journalism in the 21st century.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley-Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at kaxe.org. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dan Gannon. Weather in the listening region today, mostly cloudy, becoming sunny later. Highs 28 to 40 degrees. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, gusting up to 25. And tonight, mostly clear. Lows 0 to 8 degrees. Blustery north-northwesterly winds 10 to 25 miles per hour. Saturday, increasing clouds with highs 30 to 41 degrees. Evening lows in the mid-20s. Chance of snow after midnight with half an inch to 4 inches possible in northeastern Minnesota. And Sunday, snow with highs in the mid to upper 30s, 1 to 4 inches possible. Our KAXE question of the week is, tell us about a time luck was on your side. You can text us at 218-326-1234. Live music going.